Hey everybody, this is Danny Cunningham, and you are listening to the first ever Burning River Basketball podcast. Burning River Basketball is a new website. We've been up and running for about 2 weeks now. I'm Danny Cunningham. I'm the lead writer there, and I am joined today by none other than another staff writer at Burning River Basketball, Ben Buckets Belden. Ben, what's up, man?
I really would prefer to be called Benny Basketball, but, you know.
No, Ben Buckets.
Ben Buckets works, too.
That's your name for your 2K player. That's his nickname. So from here on out, Ben might or might not be referred to strictly as Buckets.
Hey, you know, that's fine. It's very indicative of the way I play basketball. So,
and just the way you go about life, truthfully.
Yeah, getting buckets 24/7. I'm happy to be here with part of the inaugural episode here at Burning River Basketball. This is going to be fun. Hopefully we get this posted up on the website and we figure out how to do all that.
Yeah, hopefully someone hears this. If not, Ben and I are just going to talk to ourselves for a half hour.
Yeah, so regardless, it's pretty fun, and we'll have some fun doing it, so it'll be great.
Anyways, in case you haven't figured out, this is a podcast based on the Cleveland Cavaliers and reviewing and analyzing their performance. We're about 2 weeks into the season. Cavs sitting at 6-1. They currently do have the best record in the NBA. LeBron James has won the Eastern Conference Player of the Week 2 out of the 2 weeks so far. So things have been going pretty well. What are your main takeaways from the early part of the season so far?
There's a couple things. One of them being that this Cavalier team is just very, very relaxed. Obviously, a great weight was lifted off of them by breaking the Cleveland Sports title streak. So I think is playing a major part in it. The other part is just the idea of continuity. They know, I mean, they're all on the same page, and they all like each other. They got together during the summer, and you know, it's just really showed on the court. I don't know. The other part is that I think it's great that LeBron in the early part of this year through the first 7 games has really embraced role as a facilitator. I think that's going to increase his longevity as a player. And I think that it's going to propel Kyrie Irving to the next level, I guess, in his career. He's only 24 years old. So obviously Kyrie's going to be around in the NBA, at least. I don't know how long he'll stay with the Cavs, but he's going to be around long after LeBron James is gone. So I think this is where Kyrie's going to start to take the next step in his career. That's been one thing that I've been keeping an eye on and enjoying.
Yeah, definitely. And there has been plenty of chatter about how maybe Kyrie could be starting to come into his own as maybe an MVP candidate. And Ben, I believe you wrote about this a little bit. And I touched about it a little bit today because I wrote an article about how people have talked about maybe LeBron could average a triple-double throughout the season, which hasn't been done since Oscar Robertson did it way back when in his actually second season in the NBA, which I thought was pretty remarkable because I didn't know how far along in his career he was when he did it. But LeBron's currently short of that, averaging, I believe, 22.9, 8.9, and 9.9. So he's not averaging a triple-double right now, but plenty of people have talked about it. I know you've answered this question. I answered it in a long-form article today, but do you think that there's a remote possibility of that happening?
I think that if LeBron consciously wanted to go out and average a triple-double, he could do it. I don't think that that's necessarily a goal of his. I think it might be a goal of his to just play the season as well-rounded as possible. So score when he needs to, which I feel like he doesn't really need to, like he thinks he doesn't really need to do a whole ton. And I mean, to a great extent, he's correct. I think he almost just kind of gets rebounds by accident a lot of times because really he prefers to be the one leaking out and catching the outlet pass. So if it's up to him, I don't think he's going to get 10 rebounds a game. And then, I mean, he's obviously always going to score more than 10 points a game. I mean, that's for an average.
Yeah.
So I don't mean to jinx him. He's got a really long streak of like 700-some games where he scored at least 10. So I'm going to go ahead and knock on wood right over here. Got it. So, yeah. But Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen, but I think if he really, really wanted to, it could. I just don't think he does.
Yeah, I don't think it's happening. And I did a little bit of research and looked into the Big O's triple-double season. He averaged almost 45 minutes a game.
Yes.
Hopefully LeBron's going to be playing about 34 minutes a game. Now, if he were playing 44, 45 minutes, he probably would average a triple-double because that would be adding another 8 to 10 minutes up upon what he's doing now. And I would hope that he'd be able to dish out another 2 or 3 assists and grab another 2 or 3 boards in the extra 8 minutes. But I really don't – I know for a fact he's not going to play that many minutes this year. I don't think he should. I think we're going to see a lot of instances where he's almost in chill mode for a little while, kind of how he was in the first half against the Atlanta Hawks. He went 1 of 5 from the floor. He finished the first half with 2 points. He was in his chill mode. I think we could see that quite a bit because what do the Cavs really have to prove in the regular season? It's truthfully an 82-game preseason for them.
Yeah, and I think we all know exactly who the Cavs are looking at. And, I mean,
the Clippers, right?
Yes, definitely. Clippers were number 2 in ESPN's power rankings the other day behind the Cavs, for whatever that's worth. But they're like every other year, get an injury and fizzle out in April, May, June, all of that nonsense. So not June. June would imply the finals, but April and May. So
probably April because they can't get past the second round.
Yeah. Yep. That's pretty accurate. But yeah, I don't know. I lost my train of thought a little bit, but yeah, you were talking about the 82 game preseason and chill mode and all that. So yeah, I definitely agree. They don't have much to prove, to be honest with you. I mean, as long as I think I wrote about this in the post game wrap up from the Hawks game the other night. I think the Cavs know what they have to do to be really good. And that's start on defense and use their defense to fuel their offense by getting a couple of easy buckets. When things weren't going real well against the Hawks, they were stagnant on offense. As soon as they made a couple of defensive plays, they got a layup, they got a transition three, and I don't know, all of a sudden the basket started to look wider because then they were in a rhythm because of some of those easy buckets. It's not like they were scoring in transition every time, but they had a rhythm to their game and they were playing a little bit faster. So I think that's something that the Cavs, that's their MO. And I don't know, that's the only thing that I'm really keeping an eye on. Obviously you pray for health. So those are really the only two things that I care about in the regular season is just making sure that they play the defense, they commit, and that they stay healthy.
I really just care about the healthy part. They don't even have to play defense in the regular season, truthfully. I don't care.
Well, yeah, I guess I kind of said that wrong. Like, I don't care. I mean, they didn't really play all that great a defense against the Hawks. I'm not necessarily saying that.
No, they didn't play good defense at all against the Hawks. The Hawks came into that game. They looked like a very motivated team, a team that was focused and really wanted to send a message, and the Cavs were like, and we're going to shoot like 45 threes. And if they go in, we're going to win. If they don't, we're going to lose. And oh, well, we get to go see the president on Thursday.
Yeah. And you touched on something that is a little bit concerning. Like they shot, I think it was 42 threes. And like I say, I did the post game. So that's how I know that off the top of my head, but they were 11 of 42 from 3 in that game. That's too many. Like,
it's, no, it's not
for that percentage.
J.R. Smith is on your team. That is not too many.
They missed 10 threes in a row.
That's okay. At one point during the game. You know how good shooters get out of slumps?
They get an easy one, and then they start
they
making
keep
threes.
Shooting.
Yeah, but usually that's because they got an easy wide-open one to get in rhythm, or they got a layup or a dunk, or they did something else to get their game in the back.
J.R. Smith does not shoot wide-open threes. Like, he misses those. His shooting percentage uncontested shots are higher than shots.
He said that he prefers to shoot with a hand in his face. It's easier to stay in rhythm. And as a guy who played basketball my whole life, I definitely agree with that. Like, when you're too open, you start thinking about stuff all the time, then your shot goes awry. But when you just have to catch it, not think about anything and shoot it, it's usually the result is better. So yeah, I don't know. I agree with that. But I don't know. So,
I mean, they're going to have games where they shoot 25 to 30% from three. They're also going to have games where they shoot close to 50% from three, and they're going to beat teams by 30. It's just the way this team is structured, and it's the regular season. So I don't think of it as a big deal. Maybe the one thing that might concern me a little bit is the rebounding numbers from that Hawks game, where the Hawks grabbed 61 total boards and the Cavs were at 52. That might be a little concerning to me.
Yeah, and I mean, one thing that I would say about that is that the Cavaliers missed a lot more shots than the Hawks did. So there were more rebound opportunities for the Hawks. So that has something to do with it, but I don't know. The more concerning thing to me was the fact that the Hawks just scored repeatedly from in the paint, whether it was Dwight Howard, whether it was Paul Millsap, whether it was Dennis Schroeder off the bounce.
Schroeder had a very good game.
He really did. So, I don't know. I thought that early on, I know one big thing that people were keeping an eye on in that game was Kevin Love against Paul Millsap. And really, Kevin Love he held his own in that matchup and really has done a pretty decent job defensively all season thus far. And I really think that goes back to the finals, where in the finals he really kind of just bought into the fact that he needed to be an energy player. He needed to do things a little differently. And he's taken that, and I think he's been rewarded for that early this season, that buy-in. And I think at this point, and I could be wrong, but I think at this point he's actually taken more shots than LeBron has.
I believe you're correct. I would have to double-check. I know against the Hawks they took the same number.
Yeah, they've been very close all season.
LeBron was 8 of 17, and Kevin Love was 7 of 17.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, Kevin Love still finished with more points due to free throws. And Kyrie has been the one taking the majority of the shots. He finished with 27 attempts.
That's almost a little bit too much for him, too.
What would you like to see him at?
Low 20s most of the time, I think would be good. I don't know. I'd have
Channing
to go back.
Channing Frye actually took 15 shots against the Hawks as well.
Yeah, and I think he made 6. So, five. Okay. So that really wasn't very good. But
that lineup seemed to be the one that really worked against the Hawks, though.
Yep.
It was almost as if the Hawks finally found an answer for Tristan Thompson that they couldn't find in the playoffs either of the previous 2 years. And once they figured that out, Channing Frye was inserted, and they looked lost. And yes, That's exactly when the Cavs went on that big run towards the middle to end of the third quarter, and then again in the fourth quarter was when Channing Frye was playing the center, and they played that – when he played that stretch center position almost.
Yes. Speaking of lineups, did you happen to notice how the Cavs started the second quarter the other night? Here's the lineup. They started with Iman Shumpert, Mike Dunleavy, Richard Jefferson, I believe Channing Frye, and Tristan Thompson.
Boy.
Yeah. Boy.
The Iman Shumpert backup point guard experiment is not going too well.
Yeah, and this was something I hoped that we would talk about, so this is good that you brought that up.
You're welcome.
Thanks. So there was quite a bit of speculation earlier in this year that the Cavs were going to move Jordan McRae, maybe also Mo Williams, just for the contract numbers, and get a backup point guard, and it hasn't happened yet. And the reports were that the Cavs actually had a trade in place for McRae and or maybe even Mo Williams, and obviously they decided to not pull the trigger on whatever trade that was. Yet Jordan McRae is not, to be honest, like, I don't know. I don't know if this is a possibility or not. I'd almost rather see Jordan McRae at the backup point guard than Iman Shumpert, to be honest with you. I don't know. So
I think they tried that in training camp and that didn't go well either. So that's why they haven't done that.
Yeah, but Iman Shumpert is just so bad. Like, I can't imagine like how much
not a bad basketball player. He's just so out of position.
Yeah, he's okay. Yeah, he's so bad at point guard is really what I don't know. I was getting.
And
at.
even last year, I thought, you know, maybe give him a shot at the one guard and see what he can do. I thought it was like possible, and then after seeing it this year, I'm like, oh boy.
Yeah.
No bueno.
Yeah. It really doesn't go very well at all, because, you know, whenever he starts playing point guard, he's not the type of guy that, you know, simply is just going to get the ball down the court and pass it. Like, he starts like trying to act like a point guard and penetrating and things. And sometimes you just want to say to him, like, no, just don't do that while you're the point guard. Like, you can penetrate when you're a two a little bit, but no, not now.
I think the less dribbling Amon Shumpert does, the better off the Cavs are.
Yes, certainly. Certainly. One thing that I was unaware of, speaking of point guards, I was completely unaware of how bad things have gotten between the Cavaliers and Mo Williams.
Yeah, it's not a good situation.
Yeah. So in case you missed it, the Cavaliers are, you know, Mo Williams hasn't been around this year. He said he was going to retire. First of all, he opted into the last year of his contract. Then the first day of training camp, he quote unquote retired, but he hasn't filed paperwork yet to retire. So the Cavaliers are still paying his salary, and he's nowhere to be found, and it's just all kind of bad. So the Cavaliers had to cut Dante Jones, which I don't think they wanted to do.
No, and Dante Jones has still been around.
Yeah, he was at the World Series.
He was at Ring Night. He was at the World Series. He was at LeBron's Halloween party. Like, yes. Dante Jones is still around. He's just not on the roster.
Yeah,
I think as soon as they can figure out how to make that roster spot open, we're going to see Dante Jones back on the team.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say. So he's clearly, you know, hasn't given up that lease wherever he lives in Cleveland yet. So that's going to be something that I think.
Man, after making only $8,000 last year for the Cavs, I don't know how he's paying for this.
That's true. Since he's not employed by the Cavs, LeBron's probably sliding him some money under the table.
I think he's financially stable at the moment. I think he's made enough money in his career to that he's okay.
You're probably right. You're probably right. But I'm sure the Cavaliers had some, like, hey, we'll do right for you. I don't know, whenever this roster spot happens. I can't imagine that the Cavs are going to go a whole lot longer without making some sort of a move. Especially the fact that he's around, especially with the fact that the backup point guard is just all messed up. And I'm not talking about any player, but like the whole position is just all messed up.
Yeah, like the team doesn't trust Kay Felder, nor should they at this point.
Yeah.
And I mean, Amon Shumpert can't do it. Amon Shumpert belongs on the roster, absolutely, just not as a point guard. And I think that the team maybe didn't realize how much they're going to miss Matthew Dellavedova.
Does it pain you to say that?
A little.
Yeah, because Danny and I are not exactly the two biggest Dellavedova fans in the world. I mean, he was all right, but that's about the extent of it to me.
He was what he was. He played relatively well, and I do have to give him credit in the 2015-2016 season. And then April rolled around, and he did not hit a meaningful shot for the Cavs from that point forward.
Right.
So I became frustrated again, but I thought he was overrated before LeBron came back. I thought he was a little overrated, and then he played terrible, in my opinion, the first year LeBron was here. And then he played himself into a new contract in the playoffs, because he did play well in the playoffs. I'll give credit where credit is due. He played extremely well at points. But I just never understood the love for Dellavedova. I mean, I get it because he did play hard. And I don't think he was a dirty player at all. I think he played hard. He played harder than most people in the NBA.
Yes.
And more credit to him for that. But I just don't think that the talent level was as high as some people thought. And hey, the guy got paid. Like, I'm all for getting paid if you can get paid.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Cavs miss him a little bit because they have no one else that can handle the ball.
So you don't buy what one of you and I's most infamous Twitter friends said about Matthew Dellavedova being able to start for just about every other team in the league?
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
He has me blocked on Twitter, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I've never like said anything to him. I know one time like he did like a 1 week fantasy football contest or a fantasy basketball contest. And the winner got to go to a Cavs game with him. And one of my buddies tweeted, he goes, "Hey, if I win, can I go to a Cavs game without you?"
Oh, man. Oh, boy.
Yeah, I forgot that. Like, there's not – does he start in Milwaukee? I genuinely don't know.
I genuinely don't either. I figure like, he doesn't, but they also traded MCW, so.
Well, the amount of money he's making – well, with the salary cap, who knows now? But yeah. With the amount of money he's making, it's hard to envision him not starting.
Yeah. He's making Amon Shumpert money, though, I believe, right? He's in like...
A little more than Amon Shumpert. Yeah, he started last night, played 33 minutes for the Bucks against Dallas. Scored 2 points.
Sounds about right.
2 points, 5 boards, 6 assists in 33 minutes. That sounds like a deli game.
Yeah, sure does.
So, I mean, they don't, like, miss his offensive production. They just miss him being able to handle the ball.
And get him in the right spots and that type of thing, yeah.
And run the offense. Get the ball to other people.
Lob the ball into the post to guys like Tristan Thompson off of pick and rolls and Kevin Love. So, speaking of point guards, real quickly, is there a guy out there that you, free agent, trade partner, that you have had in mind as far as who the Cavs should pursue?
I genuinely believe they're waiting for Mario Chalmers to get healthy, and then they'll bring him in. He's recovering from an Achilles injury last season playing in Memphis. I think that if and when he's healthy, they will sign him, and he will become a backup point guard because he's a LeBron guy.
So in that case, they'd have to make probably 1 to 2 roster moves to make that happen, right? Do they send DeAndre Liggins to Canton?
They would obviously – I mean, they do have a full roster now. Opening up a roster spot, I think that there are two priorities, and I'm not sure – I'm genuinely not sure which is first – are Dante Jones and backup point guard. I'm not sure which priority is first. But yeah. I think they want to find 2 open roster spots. That way, if they do some sort of trade for a backup point guard involving Mo Williams and Jordan McRae, that gets them a backup point guard and it opens up a roster spot and Dante Jones is probably back on your team.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I heard, and I actually, for like a brief second, thought that this was a good idea. Jarrett Jack is available.
I've seen him miss way too many mid-range jump shots in my lifetime.
Yeah.
I think most of Cleveland feels that way too.
Yeah. So I don't know. Did I ever tell you the story of how I sat behind Jarrett Jack's brother and sister at a Cavs game?
No, but you're going to right now.
Moral of the story. So the year that Jarrett Jack played for the Cavs, for our listeners, in case they forget, was the year, right before LeBron came back. So they were obviously
Jarrett Jack was the best trade asset the Cavs ever had.
Yeah,
No. Like, in all honesty, the moment they traded Jarrett Jack, I knew LeBron was coming back.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the stars all aligned with all of those moves that they...
But if they, like, because they wouldn't have traded him if they didn't know.
Yeah, exactly.
I genuinely believe that the moment they were told to free up the cap space and when they traded Jarrett Jack...
And Tyler Zeller kind of at the same time.
And... they got some retired guys in return.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I remember getting that notification that Jarrett Jack and Tyler Zeller had been traded. I'm like, dude, LeBron's coming back. Because there's no other reason to make this move.
Right. Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. But okay, so here's the story. The Cavs were playing the Milwaukee Bucks, and this was the year where it was shortly after Bynum had his whole thing where he was no longer around.
Why did they sign Andrew Bynum?
Oh, I don't know.
We genuinely thought the Cavs were going to be good that year. Like we were hoping for the sixth seed.
There was so much hope. But anyways,
Kyrie and Deion were supposed to be the best backcourt in the Eastern Conference.
Oh gosh, I had almost forgotten about Deion Waiters in a Cleveland Cavaliers uniform. But okay, no, I didn't. That's a blatant lie. But anyway, so
I just can't believe that they let Kendrick Perkins wear number three after they retired it for Deion.
Oh mercy me. So anyways, it was a game right around Christmas, and I'm at the Cavs game. Jarrett Jack was actually having a really good game, as a matter of fact. But I don't know. So he was we were sitting right – my dad and I were sitting, like, right over there by the Cavs tunnel. And we're sitting behind a 20-something-year-old girl with a 20-something-year-old guy. I kind of thought they were dating, to be honest with you. But I found out that I was wrong shortly thereafter.
Shocker.
And at some point I said, Jarrett Jack did his thing with like a high pick and roll, got to the elbow, made that mid-range jumper that Jarrett Jack makes all the time and misses more often. But I looked at my dad and I said, it's a good thing Jarrett Jack has that mid-range jumper or else he wouldn't be in the league because he can't do anything else. And the girl turned around, looked at me, and disgustedly said to me, "Oh, he can do a lot of other things." And I was a little bit taken aback. I kind of then thought, I'm like, wait a minute, is this Jarrett Jack's girlfriend and one of his boys, or what's the deal here? Later on in the evening then, I don't remember how the conversation went, but he was telling me, the guy then was later telling me about how this is his first, it was his first game in Cleveland, I guess, and he had seen games here, there, and everywhere else. I probably looked at him kind of funny because I was like, "What? Do you just travel for games randomly?" He said, "Oh yeah, Jarrett Jack's my brother." And then I immediately felt stupid for what I had said earlier, and I was like, I apologize what I said about your brother." And he said, "Man, I have heard 15 times worse from fans in other cities." He said that was absolutely one of the most mildest things that people have said about my brother,
and relatively true.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't all that completely wrong, and I don't know. But like I say, at the time, I was very taken aback by how defensive this girl, who I did not realize was Jarrett Jack's sister, was. So, kind of interesting story there. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm better for knowing it. That's for sure.
Yep. Sitting section, I think it's 27 right over there. Maybe it's 20. I can't remember. 27, I feel like, is what it is.
So, when you come to the Burning River Basketball Podcast, you will hear little tidbits like this, maybe some analysis, but definitely Jared Jack stories.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that through all of the nonsense and 27 game losing streaks and things, we've earned the right to tell some stories about people like Jared Jack and things like that, and to digress. So, yeah, we digress a lot. Danny and I have another podcast, and it's just like, we might as well just name it The Digression Show.
We should just do a podcast where we talk about literally anything and everything and anything.
You want to talk about the election?
No, because I'm not informed. I voted for Jerry Seinfeld. Like, legitimately wrote down Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah. I don't actually want to talk about the election, so.
Then why would you bring it up?
I don't know, because I was being stupid and trying to digress. It worked.
No, it didn't.
Well, we're not talking about the Cavs, so what are we doing if we're not digressing?
I don't know. We should probably wrap this up now because Ben just killed the podcast. But if you are listening to this, that means a couple things. One, we figured out how to get it online. That's a win for us. Two, you made it this far in. That means you really enjoyed what we had to say. If you want more of what we had to say, we'll be doing this podcast hopefully on a weekly basis, maybe twice a week. Who knows? All going to depend on the season. We obviously expect the Cavs to be very well, but they probably won't care about the regular season. So I don't know how much we're going to be doing this. Ben, where can everyone find you at?
You can find me on Twitter at bbelden330. Also, I think you mentioned this earlier, but I'll reiterate that I kind of am sort of in charge of the at brbasketball Twitter, although I delegate quite a bit, so it's not always me. But
I mentioned that on the previous podcast we recorded for a different outlet tonight.
You're right. You're right. We did do that. So there's our plug. Follow us on Twitter. The Facebook page is coming soon, so be on the lookout for that. And where can they find you, Danny?
I'm on Twitter at dcunninghamcle. I also help out on at brbasketball. And I do a lot of writing for the website, so you'll see stuff like that at least 3 times a week, if not more. Ben does as well. We, like I said earlier, we have game analysis, regular analysis, some other fun stuff that we have in the works, plus this podcast. So you'll definitely want to keep it tuned to burningriverbasketball.com.
Yeah, we've got a couple, a couple irons in the fire that we haven't exactly, we haven't shot our shot yet on some of them. So we'll be testing some stuff out. It'll be fun. Excited about the group of guys we've got together. And obviously, probably, hopefully that'll grow. And it should be fun. So we hope that the fans enjoy it as well.
Yeah, definitely. So go Cavs, I suppose.
Bye.